We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
I think it's a Buddhist proverb that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. That's how I met you, is I think I posted a couple of videos of myself doing a shitty Uchimata.
This was not shitty. It was okay.
I got a comment from you on YouTube. You actually gave a good advice that that helped my Uchimata a lot. And that's how it really began, because you have a good understanding of mechanics of a lot of the techniques. First of all, I'm talking to Nikolai. I don't even know your last name. What's your last name?
My last name is Zolotukin. The reason why the name Dax is came from my one of my favorite book. It's a Harold Robbins. The book is like Adventures, I think. I believe in English because I read it in Russian when I was really little. It's kind of palm fiction, mm-hmm. Not really classy book, but I really like it. And the main hero of the book, his name was Dax, and I kind of really like his persona.
Well, I like it. Nico, it sounds like a porn star name, Nico Dax. So how did you get into judo? How did you get so wise?
I think like I told you in one of the messages, I think it's one of the features of my general character. Whenever I like something, doesn't matter what. Let's say like it was a time when I was really passionate about like cars or something. So it doesn't matter what it is. If I like something, I'm gonna do like kind of really systematic research. So I'm gonna read all available literature, and especially nowadays where the media where you can travel, world is really global. If you really wanna study something and you're ready to put some effort in this, you'll get there.
So you obsessively pursued judo, but from what age? Like, how young did you start?
I had really weird story in this. I started training judo when I was 10 or 11. And you probably know in Russia, the judo clubs, it's the same like sambo clubs. I think it's lately, if you tend to do more like grind wrestling, and you like ground game, then you probably will more compete in sambo. If you like kind of like more like fancy throws, you probably will move towards judo.
Yeah.
Especially it's Olympic sport, but generally it's the same club, same people. So I was training from 10 to 14 or 15, and to be honest, I didn't really like it that much. I had some friends who was very high level players, very high level players, and a bunch of my connections goes from those days. And then I switched to boxing. I actually started playing boxing like at the same time. So I actually did really good in boxing. So I kind of sucked in judo, but I did well in boxing. So I quit judo age 15. I think this actually the reason why, like you said, I got kind of wise. I wouldn't say wise, but when I moved to United States, I came here for school. I was in Texas A&M first year. It's a really good school, and they have
it's a very good school. Yeah,
it's one of the only two places in United States where they have scholarship for judo. So,
they have a judo program.
Yes, they do.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't know that.
They used to have a few years ago. They have a very nice coach. They have really nice people. And so I started getting back to judo because if we do like short flashback to my young age, I did boxing and I really like it. I was really a big fan of Mike Tyson, things like that.
Yeah, why did you pick up boxing, by the way? Did you get picked on in school? Did you get into fights?
No, I think you know, it's probably, I'm not sure if it will make sense for American audience, but I guess it will be for you. In Russia, especially those days, it was like 90s. It was a lot of kind of like gang type of romantic. So the coolest guys on the streets, it was like, they were not gangs in American way. It's probably, yes. It's like a business people who did like, you know, half criminal, half shady, right? And the story goes back to 80s when the when traditional criminals, they would try and get sport people for protection. Lately, those sport people, they learn how to walk, how to do business, and they start doing independent business. So to make long story short, I was looking at those guys, and they were really cool. They drive really nice cars. Yeah.
You said I could be one of those guys.
Yes, I probably were more attracted chicks. I really, really like beautiful women they had. So that's how I got in boxing.
That's good, man. And but when you moved to the States, you switched.
I quit boxing way before because I started having headache issues.
Yeah, it sucks getting punched in the face, right?
Yeah, I was really destroyed. So I kind of quit play any sport. And when I got back here, I found the second love for judo.
Yeah.
And I think this is the main reason because all my practice and all my skills and knowledge, they were kind of almost lost. So I have to kind of build myself almost from the scratch.
So systematically begin learning the art from scratch, yeah.
There is a very common established way of learning throws, like any throws, uchimata or sotogari. So this is like classic Japanese way how you do uchikomi. Now, the funniest part that, like, the way you learn and drill them, it's not how you do them.
Yes, right, yeah.
And nobody really talks about this. Even if you look about, even if you look at latest Mark Huizinga, it's a fighting films production, Mark Huizinga DVD, which called Total Judo.
Yes.
It's very funny. He shows like classic Japanese drill, and then he says, "But this is not how I'm doing it in fight."
Yes, he is. Some of the most beautiful uchikomi that I've seen on YouTube is by him. The drills that he does are just beautiful, but yeah, you're right. In the actual matches, it's the judo is different.
Yeah, it's totally different. Technique is totally different. What he is stating, and I kind of agree with him on that. He believes that in order to pretty much what he was saying, he's saying you want to learn classic basic like throw, right? You be ready that it's not going to work. And then what you're going to do when you get in those basic principles under your belt, you kind of build your own technique, which in my opinion is kind of a little bit bullshit. Because if you look at those people, if you look at any A-level competition, all those guys, they do the same fucking shit. All do exactly the same thing. Like there is pretty much two different types of uchimata.
Yes.
Pretty much one way people do osotogari nowadays. They just start without making first step with left leg, if you're ready.
They just hook with a right leg.
So they pretty much issue what I start analyzing. I start facing the issue first. I had a friend of mine who is a very who is a level player. He was from Kyrgyzstan. He actually was a bronze medalist in Asian Games. So he was kind of good level player. He actually beat Nick Del Popolo in Moscow Grand Slam. So I guess he has some quality, right?
Yes, yes.
And I found the interesting thing. Those type of guys who's like elite players, they do technique perfectly right, but they don't know why. And it's very simple explanation because all of them start learning and drilling when they were kids.
Yeah.
So they do this naturally right, but they don't know what this principle behind this.
Right. Exactly.
And to put it in simple words, I think it's the same idea like BJJ. Actually, I think that's why I have a lot of success and good experience with BJJ guys, because the way I teach judo, I wouldn't say teach, I like to say it share. Right? Yeah, because as soon as you say teach, it raises a lot of smart ass issues. But so whenever I share.
Judo
with BJJ Something. Guys, I always try to break it down the same way they learned BJJ.
Yeah.
And the problem is that in BJJ, in each technique, there is some principles, right? Which allows small weak guy to do technique on a bigger, stronger opponent, right? So it's always something, let's call it trick. In each technique, there is some trick which separate just submission from beautiful BJJ technique, right?
Yes.
Any kid can try break the arm, right? But it doesn't make BJJ. Anyone can try punch, but it doesn't make boxing, right? Right. Same with judo. Anyone can try throw, but it's not going to make it judo. So in judo, it's exactly the same. There is always some principles and tricks in each technique, which allows technique be effortless, light, and with 100% control. And what, like you probably, like we said before, unfortunately, there is pretty much almost no system. In Europe, in Russia, in Japan, I think how this works, the people learn those classic throws, right? The classic shape. And then because they have so many good, experienced people in a dojo, you naturally picking up.
Through randori, you kind of evolve the technique to make it work, right?
Right, so you're picking up actual the real version, like the real life version. Let's call it like a training shape and real life version. So okay. Pretty much what I was doing last few years, I was figuring out the way how train and learn technique when it's like
when you don't have 30 black belts in the room to do randori with.
Right, how you start doing. And I actually don't take it like boasting. I believe we're doing really well because I'll give you an example. Yoko Tomonagi, one of the most complex throws, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not most complex, but it's not easy throw. For me personally, it took 1 year just to get basic shape, no resistance. Then it took me another 8 months to figure out how to do it in randori. Now it's one of my strongest techniques. So right now, when I have a new BJJ guy in a club, in 30 minutes, they're doing Yoko Tomonagi pretty much almost perfectly.
Yes. That's such a difficult throw. I tried it so many times. I had Justin Flores showed it to me. I don't know if you know who that is. Bill Adid, which is a European champion. He came down here.
I know him. Yeah. I know him.
He was also big on Yoko, and they always show it. And I never you said the trick or the principle. I never really quite got the principle.
Yes, I'll tell you this. I want to make a bet, official bet for $50.
Yeah, it's being recorded, so it's official.
Yes, let's make a bet. I'll make a short video.
Yes,
when I will explain principles, right?
Yes.
And you're going to try it 1 hour, just 1 hour. And then you're going to tell me, if it start work for you, I don't know, whoever will pay me $50. Or even don't worry about paying me. If it doesn't work, I'll pay you $50. Sounds good?
Sounds good. Josh and I will get together and try it and see if it works. So here we go, man. Now you have a connection to the judo world. You're a judo black belt living in Kansas, right?
Right.
And you also interact with BJJ players. So you often comment, you have sort of a foot in both worlds. You have an understanding of the elite judo level. And for example, guys like Travis Stevens do the same thing. They have a foot in both worlds. So what do you think is the difference between the two, jiu-jitsu and judo? What do you think, like, especially on the ground, what do you think is the difference between Neiwaza and the jiu-jitsu groundwork?
It's the same art, but totally different sport. And I think it's really good that it's really different, because my belief that the art of grappling is so wide, is so big, and it's so many chapters, that there is no way you can put everything in one sport.
Yeah, so that's very good. So you're making a distinction between an art and a sport, and really the sport is just a very fixed set of rules, right? And and you want to win under those rules, and that's the difference in judo and jiu-jitsu, is really the rules.
Yes, but we also have to remember that the sport is the main factor which drives development of the art.
Right.
The sport is the reason why judo is so big, and I think it's very interesting that for most of American audience, even judo players in America, most of them don't really know how big judo in the world. It's really one of the top mainstream sports, especially if you go to like France, some Eastern Europe countries. Judo is like same like football, golf here. Yeah. It's like if you play judo you on TV, it's huge. And the reason why it's so huge because the sport aspect is so huge. And the reason why BJJ is so complex, advanced, and great sport because the rules are limited standing game. You can't really do standing game in BJJ because it's no point. It's no point to do standing game in BJJ. And it's good because this allows BJJ to create one of the best and amazing ground game.
Yes.
And same vice versa with judo. If in judo you will, if in judo you know that you can, that your opponent has 3 minutes on the ground to walk you, right? Mm-hmm. Then what are you going to do? Are you going to risk trying to commit big throws? No.
Right.
You're going to be very careful. You're going to walk some little foot sweeps or whatever. Just make sure you don't give up your back. Don't give up that and that.
Yep.
So I think it's great in its own way, and I think it should stay that way.
Let me throw, in case people don't know, a little history of judo, and I'll bring it back to the judo as a sport. Judo was created by Kano in, I want to say, well, first of all, he was born in 1860 in Japan, and he evolved jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu, and founded the Kodokan in 1882, 100 years before I was born. And he found it on two principles of maximum efficiency and minimum effort and mutual welfare. Kano helped develop the rules of judo in just at the beginning of the century. Officially the rules of the sport were it was a 15-minute match, and to win it, you had to score 2 ippons. And there was a goal stated, which is something you just talked about, that tachiwaza to Neiwaza ratio, so the time you spend on your feet to the ratio of to the time that you spend on the ground should be about 80%. So most of the time you should be on your feet. That's the goal of the sport aspect of judo. And they tried some like joint locks and stuff, like wrist locks were legal, things like that. But by 1916, they made all that junk illegal. So if you guys don't know, in judo, the only submissions that are legal are the chokes and the arm locks. And then I think judo really became big when the tournaments started coming out. So the judo world championships started in the 50s and then the 80s for women. And the judo got into the Olympics in 1964 for men and 92 for women. But so to bring it back around to what we were talking about before is when Kano was asked about judo in the Olympics, he said, here's a quote, "I have been asked by people of various sections as to the wisdom and possibility of judo being introduced with other games and sports at the Olympic Games. Judo in reality is not a mere sport or game. I regard it as a principle of life, art, and science. In fact, it's a means for personal cultural attainment. Only one of the forms of judo training, so-called randori or free practice, can be classed as a form of sport." He goes on to talk about it, you know, the distinction between contest judo and the way of life, and judo as a way to carry yourself. And that's sort of the question I have is, do you think judo as a sport being put in the Olympics changed judo for the worse or for the better? It's made it more popular. Do you think the obsession with the sport aspect changed what it is?
No, I definitely think it changed because honestly, we don't really know what it is, right? We know what is it's. We already know what is the changed product, right?
Yes.
So we don't really know what is judo like without it.
Without it, yeah. I think in a certain sense, first of all, jiu-jitsu was Japanese jiu-jitsu was invented in 1500s by like the samurai. To the whole idea is to sort of defeat an armored opponent in close combat. You know, as far as a philosophy and a way of life, that's what jiu-jitsu was. So that, in a sense, something we talk about a lot in jiu-jitsu community, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu community, is like jiu-jitsu as a way of self-defense, right? That's like a popular thing. I don't hear it nearly as much in judo. I'm not sure why exactly. I think judo is actually a very effective self-defense technique on the street.
I personally believe it's much more effective than jiu-jitsu.
And it's because of the combination of... It's really because of concrete. That's what makes judo really effective. Because an ippon on the street is really an ippon. It's over.
Yeah. I'll tell you an even short story. Today, I have a 9-year-old student. So the boy, I trained him for 10 months. He's doing really well. He does Uchimata, Moroto, Seonagi, a bunch of foot sweeps in Randori. So he's pretty skilled for 9 years old. So his dad is brown belt in BJJ, and he's very passionate about BJJ. So he's one of my partners in my practice. So on Saturday mornings, they go for kids' BJJ class. And in that BJJ school, they have a star kid, you know, like the strongest kid in the club. So today was a situation when Paul, who is my student, he throw that BJJ kid with a B Hogoshi. And that was over. That kid literally started crying. It wasn't too bad for Paul.
Yeah.
And you probably know what I think about this. First, I really don't know what a self-defense is. For me, the self-defense is whenever we train judo or BJJ, right? It's we always have in mind some kind of background. We already know what kind of background will be, right? Yeah. Sets of rules. Like, it's going to be like tatami, it's going to be like 5 minutes round, whatever, right?
Exactly.
In self-defense, what does it mean? I mean, I can name you 1,000 different possible scenarios of your fight on the street, and all of them will require a totally different strategy and approach.
Well, the hope is that you could... The kind of instincts you build up as you train jiu-jitsu or judo, those same body, like your body, the memory of movements you develop is something that's going to become useful on the street. It's not going to be like there's no rules. There's no any typical situation. You're right. But the idea is that if you can throw in a goshi, that's going to somehow come into play on the street. You know, you're going to clinch. Maybe somebody tries to hit you in the face with a bottle. And the idea is you just bear hug them. And that's where the ability to do an ogoshi just comes in to play.
Right. And I think you just pretty much, you prove my belief. So what I think is that if person is practicing sport and trying to be good in sport, because for me, any self-defense situation is always downgrading the skill. In any self-defense situation, you want to use as simple as possible technique. You don't want to play fancy rubber X-guard. You don't want to try some fancy Yoko Tomonagi combined with foot sweep, right?
Yeah.
You just want something. So the problem is if someone will try practice moves based on self-defense goal, I think it will downgrade technique, and it will. It's the same. Like try imagine if there is no boxing professional. So the boxing is an art, right? It's a
yes.
very complex game. It's a chess match, right?
When yes.
it has so many. Whenever someone try do boxing for MMA, if you think about this, that it's also like it's a pretty much simplification of the boxing, right?
Yeah.
So. The reason why those MMA guys, they have ability to get some expert and choose techniques what they think are matching their needs is because they still have those boxing experts. Try imagine if there is no boxing experts.
I see what you mean. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. So you're saying that the sport, the fact that there is a sport, it helps develop the art. So, like, you get experts in that sport, and they help evolve the art. Like, they figure out new techniques. They figure out the principles of how to do the techniques better.
Right. And then the person who wants to just pick some small portion of this.
Yeah, can take
he can
it.
Go and choose whatever he wants. And another thing about this is that, like, even in BJJ, right, there is so many talk about cross, like, training, right?
Yes.
But we don't have unlimited time. We don't have unlimited sources of our body, right? So if you train in like five days a week, right?
Yes.
2 hours in the morning you do BJJ and 2 hours at night you do judo, right? But someone is doing 2 hours BJJ in the morning and 2 hours BJJ at night. So eventually this person will be better than you on the ground, right?
Yep.
And what is good about this, it's like that if you want to be like a well-rounded grappler, that's fine. It's totally fine. You go to experts and you pick up what you need. You're not going to be as good as them in some specific areas, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you can be like, you can be well-rounded. It's just a matter of what you want. And I really think that self-defense aspect is really can kill the sport. Is really can kill. People don't understand that if we just start worrying about self-defense. First, again, my personal belief, I was in several fights, street fights. All of them were significantly different, and all of them required totally different skill. That skill was very far from judo, BJJ. That skill was you want to have ability to be crazy.
Yeah, crazy, confident.
And, crazy motherfucker.
Yeah, quick and confident and act first. Yep, it's
yeah, because me as a I like to think that I'm normal person. So for me, even in street fight, I'm always think, okay, I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to have pain like in my life, right? I want to get away with minimal damage in all way of the sense, right? Not just physical damage. I also want to have as less trouble as I can with law, with moral, and so on. And when I have against me, I have a guy who never done judo, who never done any ground, never done any boxing, but that motherfucker is ready to put screwdriver in me without any doubt. Who's going to win? And plus, the real life is about guns. And so I totally agree there is maybe someday you will get in situation when you will face guy in the gi who will bow and say, okay, dude, let's do some PJJ in the bar. I think it's possible. But I also remember it's a person who is it's a showman on Russian TV. Yeah. His name is Badyuk. And he's like, he done bunch of different martial arts. He trained with Monson, with Yemelyanenko, and so on. So that person is also head coach for Special Forces self-defense. And he said the self-defense, it's the same like Kano. The self-defense for Special Forces is more like way of moral training, just way of physical exercise, because he said the only one way those Special Forces dude gonna use his self-defense skills, if he take his ammunition off, if he take his clothing off, if he take his gun off, yeah. He walk naked and then he meet another crazy motherfucker like that.
Who's also naked. Yeah.
Yes, and doesn't have any guns. Then they gonna use those self-defense skills.
All right, so, point taken. But there's another guy that we have this podcast with, Tim Carpenter, says that sport is basically simulated combat. And I have to say that there's certain things that look more like combat. You know, why the hell do we like watching two dudes try to kill each other on the mat? There's certain things, like it's fun to watch somebody throw another person. When you say self-defense, it's really a polite way of saying we enjoy the simulated combat nature. We're monkeys that like conflict, and this is kind of this organized conflict. And that's what I begin to worry about is when things like the leg grab rule, right? The leg grabs in judo become illegal.
Perfect rule, by the way. Perfect rule.
You're all right, so we know where you stand. So you think that this is this is clearly like a sport judo decision, right? It's trying to adjust the rules to make a more dynamic, less defensive, more beautiful judo, right? But right. It's taking a step away from what I think of as combat, right? Because you're limiting, you're further and further limiting the things you can do.
I totally disagree with you on that. because the goal of the leg grab rule, if you don't mind talk about this, let's talk about this rule. First, I think, and I'm not saying you like this, but I face this all day long. There is a bunch of people approaching me who is putting shit all over IGF. They call like judo like that it's pussy sport.
Yeah. Well, people like to bitch about these kind of things.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
But they also have to, they also very commonly use some kind of reasoning like this. Oh, like now, like I like MMA and I was going to do judo. Now I'm not going to do judo because it's not going to help my MMA, or like it's not going to help my wrestling BJJ match. The goal of judo is not help MMA or BJJ match. No, judo was not created for this purposes. It's the thing. People, the main goal of the rule is to keep judo judo. Because again, getting back to statement what I made like a few minutes ago, that the grappling art is so huge, it's so wide. There is a leg grabs, different type of locks, right? You can't really put everything because some of them are so dominant. So the point of the leg grab rule is keep judo, because what was going on, that when you have a guy like Inoue, like the Kosei Inoue, who never did any leg grabs, even back then when they were totally legal. Why? Because he doesn't need. He was master of judo. He had perfect uchimata. He had perfect Seonagi, Taiotoshi, Futsubi, whatever, right? Then we have a guy who's not nearly as good as him. So what that guy gonna do? That guy knows that he doesn't have chance to stay against Inoue in a judo match, right?
Yes. He's gonna stall with the by.
Yes, he's just gonna be very low and just gonna shoot for leg because he knows that the worst case like scenario, he just ended up on the ground, and this is pretty much it's a very simple way of saying it. But I also remember when I think it was Sheldon or Neil Adams, I'm not sure. So the Sheldon Rookie is the guy who is the main commentator for IGF. If you watch any events, it's that bald guy from, I think he's from Belgium. He's very nice, very educated person. And Neil Adams, I'm pretty sure most of people know who's this. It's a legendary judo player. It's a guy who it's a guy who's staying behind all new rules in IGF, by the way.
Wait. Neil Adams is behind the new rules in IGF?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Neil Adams is the guy who pretty much created all those new rules. So he is not officially author of them, but he's the one who created them, who advocated them, who's pushing them. And a few years ago, it was, I don't remember which exactly was it when, but they made some comment like this. They said, people don't understand. It's very nice to watch. It's very exciting to watch highlights of leg grabs, you know, some huge pickups.
Yes.
But they said it's really suck to watch 8 hours of failed leg attacks.
So going a little bit back to what you just said, I think in the interview with Georgi Zentaraya, he mentioned something exactly like that, which is the new rules really let a better judoka to much quicker beat the worst one.
Right.
So like,
it just allows better player show his skill.
Yes. So I guess what you're saying is that it's okay that the new rules make a judo player that if he ever wanted to join in on a jiu-jitsu tournament, that he would potentially get dominated by a wrestling type attack.
Yes, because it's a BJJ tourney. If the judo guy wants to go to BJJ tourney, he eventually needs to learn a bunch of stuff. He needs to learn how to play guard, and one of the things he probably wants to learn. I'll tell you another thing. Most of the people, if you look at technique of what is, we also need to think about what is the leg wrap. And by the way, it's probably going to bring us back to Jigoro Kano, the Professor Kano.
Kataguruma? That's a big one too.
Yeah, I see a lot of like bunch of people who is like they call themselves traditional judo people, right? And they all bitching about how this is not traditional judo, blah 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 blah. And for me, this is very funny because I want to ask them, people, please give me a favor, go online, type All Japan Championship. It's a traditional, like pretty much like Japanese national tourney.
Yeah.
And watch it. Watch it, not just some highlights of the throws, but literally watch. The Japanese judo never really change. And if you watch Japanese judo, it's a people, they don't really even grip fight. They just they hold each other with totally straight back. They almost like a dancing. Yeah. And then they just waiting for perfect timing for one attack.
Yes.
And this is kind of like idea of samurai battle. You know, like a one punch, one strike, and you dead, right?
Yes.
So the traditional judo never ever had any type of leg grabs, any type of grind, any type of this. Those moves were brought to judo by Eastern Europe, by Sambo people who didn't have enough skills to fight on a judo level, right? If you watch the first matches of Sambo guys with judo guys, because it was a famous team event where Soviet Union brought Sambo team. No, I think it's actually Japanese. They came to Georgia, and the Soviet Union made a national team of Sambo players, and some of them were Georgian, who was really good at that traditional wrestling. Right. And Japanese pretty much take the pants off them and
destroyed them. From that, you're saying, was born the Georgian style, the bell grips and like these big tegurumas and...
Right. But my point is that if you look at the core of those leg wrap techniques, it's pretty much the one technique that was only used in high-level judo was taguruma, right?
Yes.
The morote gari never really been used, and it goes to technical specific of judo because it used to be 30, 40 years ago that judo was really square. Again, it comes back to traditional Japanese judo where they stay really square with straight back. Lately, judo, nowadays, judo is a posture. So if you're right-handed, you have right feet in front. So you all your weight on the back leg.
Yep.
So it's pretty much no point to shoot the leg because if you shoot the leg on a good guy, you're going to get thrown. It's a disadvantage. The only one technique is the taguruma, and taguruma, you still can do taguruma because the key for taguruma is not leg wrap. The key for taguruma is a proper like upper body control and the shoulder trap.
Yep. Yes, and getting the hip under. But I mean, what about kataguruma?
Kataguruma. First, I'm not sure if you watch, but there is a bunch of people who are doing kataguruma nowadays
without the leg. Yeah.
Yes, without the leg, it's still there. But if you think about this, there is a very interesting thing. All those techniques, leg wrap, kataguruma, this is something which is freestyle wrestling is about. This is traditional. This is a core of wrestling, right?
Yeah.
Same like uchimata, osotogari, taiotoshi is the core of judo. Those techniques are core of wrestling. And when judo sometimes repeats wrestling in something, right? So it's the same. Wrestling sometimes repeats judo in something. You can see some foot sweeps in wrestling, right?
Yes, exactly. Yep.
So my point is that when they cut it off those techniques, they didn't really cut anything from judo. They just cut off, let's say, wrestling influence of
the connection to wrestling. I see that.
And what it made, I'm not sure, some people, they don't really see a relation for that. But when I know that guy is not going to jump on my leg right away, this is allows me to keep my back. This is allows me to keep, like, to keep more upright posture, which opens up way for actual traditional judo attacks like sasai and so on. So this is pretty much the reasoning behind that.
So Georgi Zenteria is a world champion. He said that he had no – one of his favorite techniques is Tegaruma, and he had no trouble adjusting.
Right.
To the new rules, which I thought, and that's, so you've carefully watched the 2013 World Championships, and it's all the same people, really. So it, right. do you think it looked like they adjusted well to the new rules?
If you think about this, there is not really adjustment. Because, again, I think it will sound pretty mean, but who does leg grabs?
To be honest, yeah, you're right. Defensive players.
If you found the video, it's, by the way, amazing video. It's a video from Fighting Films. I think it's, there was observation of 2004 Olympic Games.
Yes.
So Roddy Ferguson was fighting against Korean player who was very tall and very skinny type of player, but very, very good player. So, and Roddy Ferguson was shooting legs as a, like, hungry motherfucker. He just was going.
That was his strategy. Yep.
Yes. And if you think about this, that Korean kid, all what he was doing, he just was keeping his right feet in front, keeping his posture, and then he just was keep on, like, trying, like, catch the Uchimata using his move. So the point is that people who does judo, like you probably went a lot of bunch of pretty decent judo guys. I saw some of your videos when you went against some good Colombian kid. I saw your match with Nick Del Popolo, blah, blah, blah. Tell me honestly, if the rules would allow me go for legs, would they go for legs or would they still play how they play?
No. So I actually got a chance to go with them before the legs were made illegal, the leg grabs. And you're absolutely right. What I, as a much worse player, especially at that time, the legs were my, like, refuge.
Right. Like, it's just the way how don't look as a silly bitch. It's
yes, your way. Exactly. If I stood with Nick Del Popolo, if I stood my back straight, doing all I know I'm supposed to do, the chance of me hitting a Sayanagi or Uchimata on him are one in a million before he tosses the shit out of me and makes me look like a little baby. So,
in clubs I've been, I think the only one coach is briefly talk about posture. So you go into judo clubs and they never really, at least he never really break down for you the posture. So you need to have the, like, your leading feet in front. That's why your weight on the back leg. That's why if person grab your front leg, you still fine. Think about this. If you and me were going to drill, let's say, hip throw Uchimata, what ain't like Seonagi.
Yes.
And you the one who going to do the drill, if you're going to try throw me, do you want me stay perfectly straight or do you want me bent slightly?
I would want you bent slightly.
Yes, this is answers the question. So whenever you keep straight, this is gives a lot of trouble. So you pretty much illuminate opportunity for your opponent to throw you with forward throw.
Yes.
For any guy, doesn't matter how he is good, to throw you forward, he needs to bend you first. When you go according to your natural instinct and you bend yourself, you just help the guy.
Yeah. Yes.
And it just coming back to, like, understanding and education. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of which, I mean, you mentioned Roddy Ferguson. The impressive thing about Roddy is that he started at a old age of like 20, I want to say like 25 or something like that, somewhere around there. Do you think it's possible for a person to start in their early 20s and be successful at all?
Actually, nowadays I do. I used to think it's not possible. It's It's actually the question what you asking is possible. Is it possible to become elite judoka? Yes. Is it possible to win Olympic Games? I probably would say no, because you have people. There is a common established system in the world how the race players. So the race players, they go through very organized, qualified system. Mm-hmm. Right, so they race till age 15. In age 15, they go to cadets world championship. Right, for mm-hmm. age 15, 17. So they get an experience fighting with best kids around the world. They get this experience. Then, in 2 years later, they go to junior world championship. Right.
Yes.
Then they go to U21 under 21 events, and then they go under 23. So they go through steps. And this is, by the way, brings the issue why American males are not winning. Mm-hmm. Very simple explanation. They don't have this experience.
The system, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, if you think about this, pretty much judo nowadays are very, very even. Even if you take any kid from Africa, from one of the weakest judo country, technique-wise, and if you choose, like, best Japanese kid, best Russian kid, best French kid, best American kid, let's say Nick Kosser from 60 kilo, right?
Yes.
And you take those African kids and you put them a line, their technique will be the same. Their technique is the same. It's the same like in BJJ, the arm bar of purple belt, like across the decent clubs in USA, is the same like Marcelo Garcia one, right?
Yes.
It's just the way how Marcelo is setting it up and his experience, his feel.
So the experience, the sheer experience from a young age that's lacking.
Right.
Although Travis Stevens, don't you think, is an exception to that? Like, I'm not sure what his story is from a young age, but he seemed to have developed kind of on his own, actually, at a small club.
Mm. Travis Stevens is kind of like a unique case, but I admire Travis Stevens' work ethic. I admire him as a, like, I think he's a role model for anyone as a, like, really hard-working athlete.
First of all, let's just be honest and upfront that you respect a person who does a Uchimata much more than a person that does Seinagi, right?
No, it's a... I probably like Uchimada more, but I'm a huge fan of Morota Seinagi. Huge fan.
What about the Koga Seinagi, the sort of that...
Yes, you know. It's nice, exciting throw. I'm not sure the guy name. That my partner, who is a brown belt in BJJ, he used to tell me about the guy who is very famous in BJJ world, who is a top player, and he said that guy is a type of guy who is like... He has very good balance, very good understanding of grips, and he's just like win by point, you know. He just go by like he just pass the guard and like has like won a little bit advantage.
Yes.
My point is that Travis Stevens is really famous to be one of the most conditioning and strongest guy on the circuit. He is very, very strong and conditioning.
Yeah.
His game is kind of based on the power. And don't take me wrong, is he world level like technician? Yes, he is. But at the same time, I cannot compare him with guy like Elnur Mamadli from Azerbaijan, who has unbelievable, beautiful, the same type of Seonagi, but he's setting it up really like nicely with technique, with streaks. He does it really smoothly, effortless.
Yeah, that guy's amazing. But I mean, but going to Travis's weight division, I remember I saw him in 2008 lose to what's his name, the German Ole Bischoff,
right?
Who I don't know how much you watch.
I watch all his matches with Ole.
So I was really pissed at Ole because he is what you're saying about Travis. I felt like Ole does that 10 times worse, which is he's a very strategic gripper.
Yes. Yes, that's why Ole for me. At the same time, you probably, you know, everyone has uncomfortable opponent, you know? That's why you can't really make a call who's better player for national team if you put them against each other, right? Let's say that some virtual judo player named Josh. Let's say Josh can beat Travis Stevens 9 times out of 10, but at the same time, Josh will lose all matches on international, right?
Yes.
Level, and vice versa. I believe that first, Travis is very uncomfortable opponent for Ole. Talking back to your question, that Travis Stevens, the reason why he's more successful than other than, let's say, Nick DelPo, because Travis Stevens was so fanatically, he traveled and he trained a lot, like
around the world. Yeah.
Yes. That's what brought him. And I think if Nick DelPopolo will keep on traveling like he did last year, in a couple of years he will start winning.
Yeah, yeah. He's really working working hard, Nick. But so it's clear that Travis has gotten the jiu-jitsu, the BJJ hook. So he sort of has one foot in that world now, having competed in that Copa tournament. Do you think that Travis has a gold medal in 2016 as a possibility?
No, he can't.
No,
it's simply impossible.
Not even a world championship medal.
No, I mean, again, there is like history background, right? You probably know there is around like 10 major A level events, like a Moscow Grand Slam, Paris Grand Slam,
the Grand Prix,
Grand Prix, World Master. Travis Stevens, I believe, he has one gold and two silver or one silver.
You're breaking my heart, Nico, because.
I love Travis. I love Travis.
We all love Travis, and I think you have to be realistic. But do you think it's possible? I mean, stepping outside of Travis, but inspired by Travis, do you think it's possible to be a world champion in judo and a world champion, a black belt in jiu-jitsu?
I don't think it's possible.
Jiu-jitsu has evolved a lot. Winning a world championship now at black belt is very different than it was in the 90s.
Right.
I do remember there was a one judoka that did pretty well at the world championships in jiu-jitsu, and I think he was like certainly an A-level athlete, but he was maybe a bronze medalist at worlds in judo. So it was somewhat close to possible at that time, but you think the two sports and arts are different enough to where...
Yeah, the sports are so... Like, first, you asked me in the beginning what is the difference in the ground game. I think the ground game is very different. Judo ground game is pretty much... idea of judo ground game is whenever you throw the guy, and after you try throw the guy, sometimes you have some opponents, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the guy left his arm, like, neck open, whatever. So in jiu-jitsu, you're creating your situations on the ground, right? You slowly build those situations, like, you know, you attacking his arm and he's opening his neck, whatever. Like in judo, it's actually you attack with the throw, and depends how the person defend, like on the position, how he fall, like whatever, he left his... like arm or neck open, exposed, right? And you quickly jump on this. So it's a very different philosophy. That's why the Brazilian guy, I think his name is Leiter, Leonardo Leiter or something like this, he's very decorated BJJ player. Mm-hmm. I think he's one of the top BJJ guys. He never really succeeded in judo, and you never really even see him doing on the ground in judo match something. I actually believe, I think he lost by Asi Komi to some Eastern European player.
Oh, wow.
So the point is, the both arts are so big and so deep. I'll give you this example. How many BJJ guys you know who equally significant in a half guard, X guard, I don't know, top game, bottom game. How many players who has equally amazing, like, all aspects of BJJ?
Oh, you mean are well-rounded?
Not just well-rounded. You know, like, what I'm talking, like Jose Inoue has exceptional standing game, right? His Uchimata was enormous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, this is what I'm talking about. I'm pretty sure some guys, like, let's say, Marcelo Garcia. I'm pretty sure there is some position on the ground where he's, like, famous for. What he's famous for.
Butterfly and X-Guard.
Yes. So do you know guys in BJJ who's equally significant in all aspects of BJJ?
No, I mean, you're right. In terms of when you're saying significant, I presume you mean they
like
can compete. Like they compete with at the elite level using that technique.
I'm actually mean more like exceptional. You know, like, again, example, like Koseno, his Uchimata was exceptional. So he could really, like, it was like unbelievable, right?
Yes.
So my point is that I don't think when you have enough people in each sport who is really, like, significant and exceptional in some specific areas, and whenever you try cover this huge book of Art of Grappling with so many throws, so many submissions, I don't think physically one person can do it.
Yeah, so you're saying there's not any crossover to, so for example, a game like Flavio Canto, like you can't have a Yoko Tomonagi to armbar game?
No, you can. You can, and I think you should. I think you should, but my point is,
You can't have that game at a high level. So, for example, I don't know Flavio Canto, if he's ever succeeded in jiu-jitsu.
I think, I'm not sure how true is this. There are many rumors. I know several people who personally, like, a lot of them think that, a lot of them saying that, and it's true because I know for sure that Flavio Canto has a lot of projects with a top BJJ guy in Brazil. Mm-hmm. So he has some, like, BJJ black belts, like world champions who is doing clinics with him. And I heard a lot that he's, like, very competitive with them on the ground. And pretty much the proof, if you watch his match with Travis Stevens, Travis Stevens is not the easiest guy on the ground. And he was you should watch his match in Lisbon. I'm not sure if you did.
I think so, I have, yeah. They flow very smoothly, yeah.
Yes, he was all over Travis. So, but the point is that example of Flavio Canto is great. I don't know any guy who was as good as Flavio on the ground and as good as Inoue on the standing.
Has Flavio, in judo, what has Flavio won? Has he...
He has some significant results. He had bronze medal from Olympic Games, and I think he was a bronze medalist from World Championship, but I'm not sure about world medals.
I like your example of this. So you can't imagine a guy who has the groundwork of Flavio and the Uchimata of Inoue.
Right, yeah. Because Flavio Canto was famous for pretty, I wouldn't say sloppy standing game, but it was very far from best guy in the division. He was very, like, he was very well known for pulling guys on the ground, you know?
Yeah.
And it's that's why I personally, that's the one thing I don't like about his game. Even his Yoko Tomonagi, I don't remember any Ippons actually.
It's all messy. Well, that
Yoko Tomonagi.
That reminds me of one guy I really wanted to talk to you about. This is the judoka who's my judo instructor's, Ray Huxon's favorite judoka. Is a heavyweight Russian, Tamerlan Tmanov, and his Yoko Tomonagi is very good.
Unbelievable, yes. There's no other heavyweight who has that type of Yoko Tomonagi.
And he has, so this kind of reminded me, he has a killer armbar. I mean, he breaks your arm from any angle, from anywhere.
Right.
This actually makes me wonder. He would obviously not be interested in competing in jiu-jitsu. He's such a dominant force in judo, but he would be a perfect example of a guy I would believe would be easily able to win the judo world championship, jiu-jitsu world championship.
Yes, but I think it's a very, you're talking about very interesting another issue in the crossing of those two sports. There's a Mark Huizinger, whom we mentioned before. He competed in BJJ. I'm not sure if you saw that video. There is a video of him go against some very top BJJ brown belt in Europe. Mm-hmm. The guy who is, like, very dominant, like one of the top BJJ guys in Europe. So they had, like, they had match, and I think that BJJ guy, he submitted Huizinger in the 4 or 5 minutes. Then we have another video on YouTube where you can see Camilo Thiago, Mm-hmm. Very famous Brazilian judo player, like who is famous for his standing game. And Camilo Thiago never really considered as a like
ground guy. Yeah.
Yes, ground guy. But Camilo Thiago is rolling with Damian Maia.
Mm-hmm.
You can find that video on YouTube. And
yes, I'm friends with him on Facebook. Yeah. With Camille.
Yeah. So, and Damian Maia couldn't really do anything. This has raised another issue of how different those like aspects of the sport. The reason why Mark Huizinga lost to that BJJ guy, I'm not saying that Mark Huizinga cannot lose to BJJ guy, but Mark Huizinga was really trying to play BJJ.
Yeah.
So he was actually going to the guard. He was trying, like, he played guard. He tried to pass it. When Camilo is actually just make sure that he doesn't get in those BJJ situations. Yeah. And then when we have Damian Maia, who couldn't submit Camilo for, like, 4 or 5 minutes, and then you watch Camilo in World Masters where Russian Denisov unbar him from standing
beautifully.
Yes. So the point is that even you, with your experience, try imagine you go against BJJ guy and you just making sure you don't really get on the ground in those BJJ positions. It's not that hard. I mean, if you same size and you equally skilled, and you can do pretty well job trying to avoid get pulled in the guard.
It's challenging. It would be an art in itself. I feel like you could develop a game that transfers judo to jiu-jitsu, but one of the biggest problems is I think the judo guys are not interested, right? It's the same as the high-level wrestlers are not interested in learning submissions because they've been at the elite level for so long, they don't want to learn something, a completely new art.
It's the same, like I see a bunch of BJJ guys who doesn't want to bother learn how to throw.
Yeah.
and I think it's perfectly normal. And another example of this, think about this. And this is again, try imagine if MMA guy will start bitch about and he will say, hey, you know what? I think BJJ rule sucks because you can't slam the guy when he's doing flying submission on you, right?
Right.
Let's say someone is get like triangle on you.
Yeah.
In MMA, you can lift and slam him, right?
Yes, exactly.
In BJJ, you can't.
Nope.
But for me, it's perfect. First, the goal of BJJ is not to serve MMA. The goal of BJJ is to serve BJJ, to get better and to get stronger and more complex. The rule, because you cannot slam the guy, maybe it makes it less realistic from point of virtual self-defense thing, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, this rule allows BJJ game get developed, get more fancy, where you have bunch of techniques, like when you like hanging on the guy and you're doing a bunch of stuff, right?
Yes, omoplata and all that stuff. This is I like the way you put it. It's so the restriction of the rules, it's not about making it somehow like reflective of a self-defense situation or some bullshit like that. It's more about a rule set that allows you to develop a really complex system of
This is what makes sport. Because if you look at Michael Jordan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how he played basketball, you understand there is no way you can do this in 1 month, right? It's a years and years of drilling. This is sport. The same in BJJ. What those black belts doing, it takes years. It's a narrow specialization in certain area. Can you be well-rounded? Yes. Will you lose to expert in some specific areas? Yes. But it's just your choice whom you want to be.
Yeah, and that's something. So Josh Vogel, the black belt that you're also friends with, his goal is he's actually an excellent instructor, just as you are. His goal is not to be at the elite level in jiu-jitsu competition. His goal is to be a well-rounded, like, be able to teach any technique to any player you know, to any kind of body type, and just have this wide knowledge of for teaching purposes.
Right.
So that's his goal. My goal, I mean, I started late in life, but I really enjoy taking one technique and drilling the shit out of it until, like, my brain hurts. Like, I'm monogamous with techniques. I like just sticking to one thing for years.
By the way, you're a perfect example of try imagining we try make you like expert in everything.
Yeah.
Man, you won't be able to handle even with your brain.
Yeah, I would break down. But one thing I did want to get from you, I'm fascinated by there's certain guys, and we don't really get that in jiu-jitsu as much, but there's certain guys that like strike fear into the hearts of their opponents. Like in wrestling, Karelin was big on that. And I think Tamerlan Tamanov is an example of a guy who is sort of famously, like, nobody wants to go against him.
I think
it partially has to do, I mean, I'd love to get your opinion on it, but I think it has to do with the fact that the threat of an arm, a broken arm, is there. Or is it something more complex? Is it some mental aspect of the game?
You know, he's a type of person. I know. I think America is a very nice country. Those type of like this type of behavior is considered nuts here, right?
Yes.
But you still can see these people here, and you can see much more of them in Eastern Europe. There are some people whom you look at the eye and you kind of feel like a little bit uncomfortable. So the Tmianov was the essence of this. He is probably one of the type of rare people who totally lacks natural fear.
Yeah.
So he's like kind of probably natural born fighter, right? He enjoyed this. And plus, I think he was grown in Caucasus region, and then that was very, I think, like really not easy time for the country. Those military conflicts, those criminal culture around. So he's the classic type of guy who feel free to hurt you in a bad way. And I think those guys, especially when they come in from comfortable European Western countries, they could feel it. And plus, he had that technical superiority. And it's interesting thing about him, because his judo is actually classic Japanese judo.
Yes.
Like all his technique, he talks about this a lot, that his technique is actually classic Japanese judo, which proves another time that classic Japanese judo is still best.
Still king.
Yes, it still can.
Well, what about Iliadis? Or what about let's take Iliadis. I mean, that's you wouldn't call that classic Japanese judo, would you?
No, I wouldn't, but he still has a lot of this in base. I'm not talking actually like the way, let's say that Uchimata, right? Tumianov always did Uchimata like classic Georgian way, right? But at the same time, I'm talking about the foundation, the basic principles, how he hold the grip, how he keeps his, like all those things, which requires a lot, many hours of drilling. That's, by the way, what rule is forcing you. Those new rules forcing you to be a judo player. And for many people, it's hard, because if before you can enter judo competition without really doing judo, just being good wrestler and just like jump on these legs as crazy.
Yes.
Nowadays you can't really do it. You need to really put like hours and hours and hours of judo practicing behind your belt. And I think what Tmianov was feared for, as well as Iliadis, like Iliadis has that traditional Georgian technique, and for his size and his weight class, he's still considered like strongest guy.
Yes.
What Tmianov had that enormous power. He's exceptionally strong person. Exceptionally. He's like probably 260, 270.
Yeah.
And I heard some rumor that he could pull up like 100 times or something. So, and if you combine that power with the mental desire to kill and with technical,
yeah,
like with his technical superior, I think that's what
that just creates a monster that everyone is scared of.
Yes.
You think people are And I saw the match between him and Teddy Riner, or however you pronounce his name.
It was a very close match, by the way.
Yes, it was. Riner, at the end, treated him. It was a funny interaction. He treated him like a child a little bit. And I could tell it really pissed off Manov. Because he kind of dragged him around, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was an interesting interaction. But it kind of... It showed that, to me, Riner is like the ultimate Japanese judo. Or maybe I'm biased, but to me, Osoto Gari is judo embodied. That's one of the most pure techniques in judo.
Yes, it's a pretty complex technique to get. It has simple shape, but understanding how to use it, not very simple. Not very simple. Simple. I agree about that. Reiner is pretty good in those basic classic judo techniques like Osoto Gari, Uchimata, Harai. I wouldn't say him extremely technical. Like the guys like Suzuki, Inoue, they were still way more superior.
So
but
you think a lot of his superiority comes from just the physical build? The you know the power and the height that comes from that.
Yes, I think not just the power by itself, but I think the power combined with speed, with feel, with big, because I honestly don't know any other guy, not just in judo, any other sport with this size, who is that like has that natural. He looked like a fucking Greek god. He's yeah. like Apollon. Yeah. I mean, because usually guys that size, he's...
There's some fat. Yeah.
Yes, they're either skinny or they're fat. He's extremely proportional. He's just like his natural bone effort. Yeah. So...
Yeah, that's... just to... Because a lot of the people that would listen to this are probably, at least at this time, going to be jiu-jitsu people. So if you had to give advice in terms of a training on the feet, would you give a jiu-jitsu person advice that they should cross-train in judo just a little bit?
Yeah, I think every trillion BJJ, and I think vice versa. I think again, those bunch of issues which belongs to rules, we didn't cover gripping rules, and I just want to say a little bit about those the new rules. As many people complaining, you cannot really break break the grip with two hands, right?
Yeah. Well, if you can you go over that real quick in case people don't know? So
yes. So the rule says that nowadays you can only break grip with one hand, and this is actually the first I was really pissed at this rule because I used to break the grip with two hands, and I was kind of like thinking, I don't really like this rule. But then when I start digging in, I kind of feel ashamed that I didn't really understand idea right away. Idea is very simple. If you look at the basic grip fighting skills, right? One of the core technique, like kind of foundation understanding that you cannot break the grip of bended arm. You want to stretch the arm, make sure it's straight, right? When the arm is straight, you can't easily break the grip. Right. So what those judo rules make, they make sure that when you grip fight, you don't just use the power of two hands. You also have to use movement. You have to use... So you have to be able create technical situations when you break the grip with one arm. Because if you create right movement and situations, you still easily can break the grip with one arm. Mm-hmm. So the point, again, is just pushing people to learn technique, which takes some time. And it's true, it's not easy for people who just randomly try to judo.
Yeah, well, I mean, we just mentioned gripping. I think it's one of the most complex parts of high-level competitive judo is the gripping. Like for me, people that aren't in a way that don't have an amazing uchimata, you have to use gripping to gain an advantage in terms of like an advantage to set up your technique and not let them get their technique. So, but that's something that like in my judo club and definitely in jiu-jitsu, the gripping is completely, a lot of times, it's like there's no system, there's no understanding of the correct gripping. Do you see, is there a way to improve that?
Yeah, I think it's very, very simple way to improve it. There is a kind of common system of grip fighting, and I totally agree. This is probably one of the most skills which I can feel the guy. Like, it takes me 2 seconds to feel the guy after we start grip fighting. I can tell you if the guy is judo guy or jiu-jitsu guy.
Yes.
I totally agree that for some reason, the grip fighting is rarely taught. And unfortunately, if we look at the famous Jimmy Pedro video,
yes,
like a grip fighting, like world champion, I personally think it's... It's a great video. It's a good techniques, but I think what he's doing, they try and show particular technique without explaining principle behind.
Yes, the principle was definitely missing. It was just a patchwork of like tips. It's almost like tips on gripping.
Right.
I wish there was a more systematic approach to it in
right.
his video.
And I think the way I try share again, let's use this word share with because yes. The way I learned grip fighting just from fighting with A level players, I was always passionate about grip fighting. Actually, my grip fighting philosophy has been changed drastically last year. Yes. Actually, last 2 years, I used to be big on the grip fighting. I used to be like fucking maniac on grip fighting. I would collect each possible grip fighting technique. And then I understand, first, everybody moves different. Everybody has different grip and strategy. You don't want to learn 100 techniques of grip fighting. All you want to do, you want to just get basic understanding of grip fighting.
Yeah, so what you're really getting at is you need to get the principles down, but you then need to – then the same thing that the Japanese fighters are doing is you need to get, hours, thousands of hours of randori.
I don't think the grip fighting is that much about, hours. It is about hours, but I don't think it needs that much drilling at, let's say, Shimada.
Right, I see. So – that's interesting. So you think that you can improve your gripping significantly with just a little bit of work. Now, you don't need the 10,000.
Yes, that's my strong belief. I think people need to understand the principles behind gripping. If you start understanding this, even the way we hold the gi, how many times you see the people just totally lock the fist? All the time, right? It's one of the biggest mistakes. If you look how Japanese grip,
as opposed to opening it up, yeah.
Thumb open, and this is this whole system, and just basic principle, just the understanding basic principles, it would change your game drastically. I'll give you another simple example. How many people you see when they learn how to break grips, they just break the grips. How many people you see who break the grip and keep it? Very rare. But this is very simple thing. You break the grip, right? You put that arm away from your gi, hold it, just keep it, hold it in another arm. But it's hard to explain on in conversation.
Because you should be able to attack off of that too with the soda and things like that,
right?
Yeah,
it's even not about the deck, but for me to get advantage on a grip fighting, let's say if I agree fighting with you, I want you grab me. As soon as you grab me, I break the grip and I keep it. And now I'm in better position. And from that, it's really hard for you to break it. But again, I wouldn't say that learning those particular gripping technique is I wouldn't say it's bad. Any training is good. But I think you can't really predict. There is 100 possible different ways how people grip fight, and if you just in your brain, if you don't have understanding of the principles and rather you just have the common patterns, right? And then what will happen if I put my hand in another angle? Then you would, oops, I don't know what to do.
There's a lot of people I train with and I talk to that are really interested in learning judo for BJJ, so like osotogari, and not sorry, uchigari, basic foot sweeps, things like that. Would you recommend the person maybe like pick one technique and just drill the shit out of it? Is that the best way to go for a jiu-jitsu person?
I would say again, I would say that is it's a good idea to get understanding of principles, because again, for me, I don't really look at judo right now as a different technique. For me, most of the forward throws, especially nowadays, if you look at the people, most of them use what you call Koga style entry, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about this, Uchimata, Seonagi, Soda, Harai, it's pretty much the same entry, it's just different gripping, right? Yep, but yes, it's the same with the back throws. If you think about this, that like Uchigari, they carry a lot of similarity in. So I would say that if you very limited time, you can learn one technique, but make sure you have good instruction where you understand principle. And very simple rule test. If you feel that the technique requires power, if you need to kind of like muscle through, then you're doing something wrong. If you feel that you need to have more momentum to do technique, like if you can do technique like with speed and you cannot do it slowly, it's something wrong.
There you have it, folks. If you need power, you're doing something wrong. That's from the words of a brilliant black belt.
Oh, you're too nice. If I would be brilliant, I would be Olympic champion. So, unfortunately,
that's true. Brilliance is not enough. What? You also need to start when you're 8 years old and not stop until you're 23.
I think what really can help to beat a JJ guy, learn judo, use BJJ, because the principles. I was amazed when I started working with that my friend who's a brown belt. His name is Jesse Hernandez. I was amazed how pretty much everything is the same. Now when I teach kids Yoko Tomonagi, I ask Jesse show some pendulum sweep on the ground. Mm-hmm. So we show principles same like with body judo, like the body judo. The close contact game, like which is Zantarai is famous for, right? And a lot of people think it's based on power, but using BJJ example, let's try you want to get very tight pin, right? Mm-hmm. You want to get like very tight pin. Do you want to jump on guy like crazy, or you want to slowly suck him in, make sure you get like no space at all?
Well, the second, yeah.
Second, same. So I would suggest really start thinking about standing same way as the ground. How many good guys you roll on the ground who was very tough and muscling in the BJJ?
I would say zero. Very few.
Same in standing, I guess. Same in standing, but overall,
it's difficult, right? I mean, you have to admit that there are grappling sports where strength and power are more useful than in other sports. So, like, I would argue in judo, power, well, I don't know, but it feels like power is less important.
Yes, and for me, what my point is, it's the same in judo. There are power involved. And sure, when you go against Teddy Riner, when you can just lift you with one hand, its power will be there, and you have to deal with this. But at the same time, if you choose any of your like favorite BJJ technique, I'm sure you don't really go like crazy muscling motherfucker right when you're applying it, right?
Technique
it's
is
all
everything.
About, yeah. Technique, same there. So that's why I really think it's the same. Like if you have beginner, if you have some wrestling guy and you ask him to go against BJJ guy, you probably. And I would ask you give him some advices 5 minutes before match. What are you going to tell him? I bet you're going to tell him something like, hey, man, you know, make sure you put your elbows inside, right? Make sure you keep your, like, posture straight. Don't put your head down, something like this.
All technique stuff, yep.
Yeah, basic principles. It's the same in standing game. I think it's more important than some particular technique because the principles are the same for most of the techniques.
Yeah, unfortunately, the principals are sometimes, like you said, the instructor has to be good. The principals are difficult to discover.
The reason why I'm so passionate, the reason why I spend so much time and money and effort to research techniques, go travel training with the best players, because I never really win anything big. I never really satisfy my judo ambitions in the young age.
You're saying that if you want an Olympic gold, that drains that curiosity and the passion out of you, that you have accomplished the
right. Yeah, so, and that's why I'm thinking if I would keep on playing judo, and if I would be passionate about judo, not boxing, when I was a kid, and let's say if I would place even like second in Russian national championship, which is like pretty much Olympic level, I probably wouldn't be there today.
We wouldn't be having this conversation. You would be sitting back with a glass of wine and some beautiful lady and with a gold medal around your neck.
I still have wine and lady.
But no gold medal.
So that's why when you said I'm brilliant, make sure that people understand. I'm not that good player. I'm not that good player for several objective reasons. I never had really chance to like train full time. I never really had, even nowadays, do I want to compete? Yes. Do I have training partners? No. Do I have chance to go and fight with the best people for fighting practice? No. That's why no chance for me. If I go to U.S. Nationals, I probably will, but I probably most likely even wouldn't get the bronze medal.
Well, you have a very honest and objective analysis of the situation, which I think is actually what's required to improve your game or to have any kind of understanding of the game. I think when you first commented on my throwing ability, you know, I was starting out in judo. I think it's very easy to dismiss comments like that and think I know what I'm doing, but you know that you helped me sort of see my game in an honest perspective, to where I realized that I'm doing some things fundamentally wrong, especially with the amount of pull I was doing and footwork also. So
I think Kazushi is one of the most one of the most misunderstood, by the way, issues, especially I see for BJJ guys. If you think about this, even using any front throw, right? For me, the like eyes-opening experience was the very old Soviet Union video on the sambo, and the coach was saying it doesn't matter how strong you pull, because you pull with your bicep, right? All you want to do, and if you pull strong, it's a nature of physics behind this. If you pull something really strong and you put it in the graph, you will also have a slope, right? You will have like that, like rise the peak of your power, and then it will go down. What Kazushi is it's a constant pressure between your two hands, and when you have that pressure, it's the same like, try imagine if you put some metal bar inside of the gi of your opponent and you grab that metal bar through the gi, and now you just rotate that bar with your legs, with your body.
The whole torso, yeah.
Yes, that's the point of Kazushi, and how many people think about this way.
So what you have to do is you have to realize that principle, you have to internalize it, and you have to practice the shit out of it.
I agree.
Those are all very difficult things, but
right. And then my point, again, that I also notice sometimes when I was like, talking to someone and I'm saying like, hey, like this technique is not good, people also like sometimes they take it like I'm being, you know, smart ass trying to teach someone. I'm not like a level player guy myself, but it for us as a sport lovers, it's not necessary to be able to see if they like the reality, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I went for Josh's wife's birthday was yesterday, so I went to the restaurant with them, and I ordered chicken, and the waiter looked at me. So it was a Malaysian restaurant that has a lot of sauces, but I ordered the chicken without any sauce, like steamed, and the waiter looked at me and just said, "It's not for you." So he disapproved of my order, and it kind of reminded me of your advice in judo in that. You know, you have to be brutally honest about the analysis of, you know, of where you stand, of what you're trying to improve. If that's the thing you want, is you want to improve your judo or your jiu-jitsu, you should be honest with yourself.
Okay, man, it was a big pleasure to talk. If you want to talk any other time, feel free to call.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks for talking today. Talk to you later, buddy.
Bye-bye.